Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
The holidays are here, and it's time to head to the Heritage Meat Shop for some juicy Berkshire pork roast, tender Piedmontese steaks, traditional Christmas goose, and duck. Our world-famous charcuterie and fresh meats are guaranteed to please everyone, whether it's a party of 2 or 200. Be sure to stop by the Heritage Meat Shop to make your holiday celebration a delicious and memorable event. The Heritage Meat Shop is located at 120 Essex Street in the historic Essex Street Market on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. Call 212-539-1111 to order now.
You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm back for another week of radio at Roberta's Restaurant, Bushwick, Brooklyn. And today, I've got a West Coaster, Ryan Farr, of San Francisco's 4505 Meats, and author to the fresh cookbook, Whole Beast Butchery. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Pleasure.
You know, last week I had on the LA-based duo Hot Knives, the vegetarian duo that just came out with a book called Salad Days. So this is sort of apropos to be talking about the exact opposite, the meat lover's book. So for those listeners out there who haven't been to the West Coast in our Brooklyn area, can you kind of talk a little bit about how you got into butchering?
Yeah, well, my background is in restaurants, as a chef, restaurants, and always dealing with the whole animal whenever we'd get it in, and started doing that because I wasn't able to get exactly what I would want from the vendors. You know, I wanted to get different cuts, like the neck and, you know, all the offal and everything. So started creating relationships with the farmers and, you know, just getting all these animals in and starting to break them down. And basically, just through that process of elimination, taught myself, you know, how to do what we're doing now, and always, you know, talking to my peers and whatnot. So went and created this book, which is a step-by-step how-to butcher book of, you know, pig, lamb, and beef, about 500 pictures. And it's the book that I wish I had when I was working in restaurants creating this. And then about 3 years ago, my wife and I started 4505 Meats in San Francisco.
It's such a interesting thing that you started out as a chef and then went to butchering. What was the moment that you kind of said, wow, this is what I really want to do?
It's just the connection with the animal, you know, completing that circle, or closing in on it even more than it was before. It just kind of just moved me and was like, this is awesome. And I just loved it. I love being able to take the whole animal and, you know, in a way it's almost like a challenge, a formula of how can I break this whole animal down pretty much at the same time, eat it all at the same time, and not have any waste. So it was just always a fun thing that we love to do.
How did you learn? I mean, I feel like butchering, it's such a difficult trade. Were you reading books, or did you learn from other people, or just kind of teach yourself? Or
yeah, I learned from here and there from past chefs or the cooks that I worked with, and you know, there's some books out there and some stuff on the internet, but you know, for the most part, it was just kind of saying, okay, I know this is the ribeye, you know, I know how to use this. How am I going to utilize everything else? And looking at recipes and just really kind of walking through it myself and process elimination of, you know, figuring out. And once you realize that, it doesn't matter, you know, what the cut you make, as long as you cook it right, it's going to taste awesome. So it's really just having fun with it.
I've had Adam Tiberio, another fellow butcher, on the show before.
He's a badass.
I asked him the same question, which is, you know, as a kid, did you love playing sports? Because butchering, to me, is very physical, and it seems like such a sport every single day from start to finish.
Yeah. No, I was definitely into sports and played every sport that I could play till, you know, I stopped playing sports, which was, you know, when it was time to go get a job.
Yeah. So let's talk about the shop. I mean, first of all, I want to go to there, as Tina Fey would say. You're teaching people how to butcher, and it's pretty amazing. What can you explain to people what exactly you're teaching? And
yeah, so we have our commissary butcher facility, Sausage Lair, in San Francisco, and we do a number of different classes everywhere from a basic hog butcher class to sausage 101, advanced sausage, lamb butchery, and then we do a whole beef class, which is we have one on Sunday. They're all, pretty basic, about 3 hours long, except for the beef class is about 9 hours long. And they're all really small, about five students in each class. And each student takes home X amount of pounds of meat. In the beef class, each student takes home 100 pounds of meat. And so we go ahead and crowd vac it, pack it, label it, put it into a spreadsheet. The spreadsheet's formulated, so if you took out, a couple ribeyes, it would formulate your inventory so you knew what you had. So, 6 years from now, you wouldn't look in the back of your fridge and be, what is that weird piece of frozen meat, And we just have a lot of fun with it. They're all hands-on classes. It's not really a demo where I'm talking to people. They're the ones cutting it. I do a few cuts. I walk around the table and just instruct everybody what's the next move, and everybody has different pieces of the animal in front of them, and it's a lot of fun. It's a real kind of bonding experience for people too.
What is it like? I mean, every class must be different in terms of the crowd that you get. Has there ever been a moment where like a student has made a discovery or something that sort of changed a technique that you do or an approach that you do to anything?
Definitely. I think that the one thing that is great for the classes is that I ask everybody, what they know about what we're doing first. And a lot of people say, oh, my parents did it like this, or I've done it like this before. And it's always just kind of at that moment, we're just kind of bouncing things off. And if it's something I've never heard of before, I'm like, oh, well, that's really cool. That makes sense. Or if it doesn't, then we talk about why we'd want to do it this way. So yeah, always learning from everybody that comes to class.
So tell me about how this cookbook came about, and what was the main focus or drive of why you wanted to make this book?
I had a blog. We still do, but I don't put posts on it like I used to, which was basically doing step by step. We would do, foie torchon or making a stock or just basic step-by-step things, the techniques that I, love to do and wanted to share with the public, because I didn't think that there was, anything out there like this. And so it just kind of snowballed and we created the book. Still, there's nothing out there that's quite like this with step-by-step and so many pictures and so many captions, and especially the photography is pretty amazing too.
It's beautiful. Yeah. I just want to wrap everything in it. It's just like this beautiful wallpaper.
Yeah, Ed Anderson did an amazing job.
Really incredible. And let's say, since I know nothing about, I go to the butcher shop. I love my local butcher shops, Marlo, and
it's amazing
places
ones,
like that. Yeah, but I definitely don't know if I'm confident enough yet to kind of get the knife and start cutting. So what are some of the things like people should start out on with the book? Like what's an approachable thing to break down?
Yeah. Well, the great thing about the book is that each page is a little animal index on top that'll show you, what part of the animal you're at and what you're working on or what you're looking at, because it can get pretty confusing with so many pictures. You're like, well, where am I? So that really helps. And so you really can just kind of look at that and be like, okay, well, I'm going to go get this pork shoulder. Pork shoulder is a great thing to start with. There's a nice, pork medallion, technique in there of removing the upper part of the shoulder and the shanks and taking the skin off. So it's a good entry level, and a whole pork shoulder is fairly easy to find. I know that probably Marlo or Meat Hook or Fleischer's could totally, pre-order that for you.
Totally. So what's one of your favorite cuts of meat of all time that's in the book?
Well,
I know that's the toughest question ever, probably.
Well, I love neck. Any neck, beef, lamb, pig, any sort of neck that is out there has always got really nice kind of small muscles, really good fat, really kind of sweet. It's always good to braise lightly or a slow roast, but it's not something that you just want to like boil. It doesn't need to be cooked, till it's dead. Well, until it's overcooked.
Right.
The neck is great, and usually that's my first cut that I always when people ask me what's my favorite, then everything below the neck is my second favorite.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. That's a good, well played, good answer. You have a great recipe in the book for lamb cheddar. Can you explain what that is?
Yes. It's basically, you know, taking the rib bones out of the rack of lamb and removing them from the loin and keeping that whole section whole. So you have, you know, your lamb loin, and then you have your belly flap laying down. And then we'll, you know, season it up, and we put, you know, some really tasty, you know, herbs in there and chilies, and roll it up. And so it's a whole, you know, loin section with the belly wrapped around it. And it's wonderful on the grill, you know, on open fire preferably, because you get really good char on the outside of that belly. I mean, the skin's a little tough. There's some good fat there. And so giving it that char will really kind of crisp it up and add a whole nother depth of flavor. And then you have the loin inside that will, you know, take on that heat, but it's not going to be cooked as fast or as abrasive as the wood on the outside. So you really get that best of both worlds, that, you know, lean loin in there, you know, with that fatty charred belly on the outside.
On your day off, what is your go-to? Like, what is the meat of the gods that you're, the dish, per se, that you would love to make at home?
The meat of the gods.
I don't know.
I mean, I'm actually, like, I love seafood.
Yeah.
And really been craving razor clams lately.
Yeah.
So my retirement plan is a small little seafood plancha shop
where we do
shellfish. Otherwise, days off, we go to the zoo usually.
Yeah. Stay away from the meat. you know, butchering and understanding where your meat comes from is definitely something that is becoming more and more common in across America. And it's very prevalent in San Francisco and LA and New York. But for other cities, like, how do you think people who are kind of used to going to the store and getting the styrofoam wrapped cuts of meat, like, how can they sort of branch out and try to find what's happening in these other cities, per se?
You know, just start looking for it in your backyard, really. I mean, there's, you know, there's got to be somebody, you know, around there somewhere that is either it's you know, somebody that's processing game, you know, meats for folks, or small farms that can sell you, you know, bigger pieces of meat, something that's not, you know, it might be frozen wrapped in, you know, white paper with a stamp on it, but you know, trying to get away from the styrofoam plastic meat is kind of the priority right now. As soon as you just kind of stop doing that and looking around, you can usually find it pretty easily.
Yeah. Do you hunt?
I have been hunting, but I'm not an avid hunter.
Yeah. I feel like there's actually, I'm from Texas, and there's a place called Mardona Ranch that does buffalo hunts for women, and I kind of want to learn how. I don't know. Yeah. I think I'm too scared to do any of that.
Yeah. I mean, I have nothing against it. I just... there's not much hunting in San Francisco.
Yeah. I'm guessing you've probably killed an animal or two in your lifetime. What was the experience like the first time you did it?
You know, I really just try not to think about it. I knew what I needed to do, and I wanted to do it as fast and quick as possible, and so it wouldn't harm the animal. They were, it was a goat, so.
So then after, did that, like, change anything for you, or you were just
it changed it. Yeah, once it kind of stopped and I was, you know, driving back and reflecting and you know, it really appreciated eating, you know, the animal. I mean, I've always appreciated the meat that we ate because it's such a good relationship I have with the farmers and the animals that they raise. But, yeah, it changes just a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's important.
Well, and you're also from one of the best meat cities, Kansas City.
So. Yeah, born in Kansas City. Yeah.
I believe we're going to take a quick break. But when we get back, we have a lot more from Ryan Farr. You're listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. Stay tuned.
M-E-T-H-O-D, man. Hey, you, get off my cloud. You don't know me and you don't know my style. We'll be getting clear when they come to a jam. Here I am, the Method Man. Patty cake. Hey, the Method Man. Don't need Skippy Jip or Peter Pan. Cause I'm not butter. In fact, I snap back like a rubber band. I be Sam I am. And I don't eat green eggs and ham. Now the hitcher, when they got there, you'll be like, oh shit, that's the jam. Turn it up, now hear me get wild. I'm about to blow, light me up. Upside down, side, inside and outside.
hitting you from every angle. There's no doubt I am the one and only Method Man, the master of the plan, rapping shit like Sharan. Rap with some of this and some of that. Hold up, what? I thought I saw a putty cat over there, but I think he bets to be bored of the diggy dog shit right here. Yippee, yippee, yeah, yippee, yeah, yippee, yo. Like the acceptance since your average flow. Coming like raw. Tell me how you like it so far, baby boy. The poetry's in motion, coast to coastin'. Rub it on your skin like lotion. What's the commotion? Oh my lord. Another corn chop by the Wu-Tang sword. Hey, hey, hey. Like that. It's the Method Man. Ain't no whippin' to blow. It's the Method, right, y'all.
You're just tuning in. You're listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm still your host, Helen Holliman. And I'm joined today by Ryan Farr, who is the author of the fresh, new, beautiful, Whole Beast Butchery. And we've been talking a lot about meat, and frankly, I want to go out and get a hamburger right now. But
yes,
this is a beautiful book. It's definitely my kind of book because it has lots of photographs, and it's very thorough in terms of explaining the step-by-step of how to break down animals. During the cookbook process, what was it like working with a photographer when you would have to do these very technical things? Like, did you run into any problems? Like, you would make a cut and then he needed to do a reshoot, or how did that work?
I mean, it was an absolutely amazing experience. Just, you know, Ed Anderson, who did the photography, is all pro, and he came in and we did it within 2 days. We did all three animals within 2 days.
That's
and so
amazing.
It was a long, you know, like 14-hour days. But yeah, I just did my thing and he was right there, and we took he took around 2,300 pictures. And the hardest part was it was cutting down the pictures to only have 500.
Right.
And to make sure that the pictures that were chosen told the story and it flowed, you know, how it would be done, and the smartest way to do it as well. So
something that struck me most about your book is I didn't realize that butchering is really like it's an art form, like a freestyle art form.
Mm-hmm.
I always kind of, because I know nothing about butchering, I always thought there were sort of the standard cuts, but there's so many ways to go about it. And, you know, can you talk a little bit about that? How do you freestyle butcher, and what, you know, how does it work? Because I think about like Cajun Louisiana has a very unique kind of butchering. Different cultures have specific cuts, but how do these come about, and what are some of the things that, what is a signature cut you love to create?
I think that, you know, a signature cut, I don't know. It's really, there's a lot of cuts I like to do. I really like the big, you know, Flintstone chops, tomahawk chops, you know, it has a long bone on it, you know, a big, beautiful ribeye. But the way I always look at the animal is, how can I eat it? You know, how, what's the best way to eat this? How am I going to want to cook this? And so that usually determines on how it's going to be, you know, butchered, which is pretty much, I think any butcher would really say that, but you know, for us, we're doing a lot of the cooking of the meat. We, you know, we do sell, you know, steaks and all different parts of the animal. But, you know, we're at the farmer's market. We're always roasting some part of the animal. So it always depends on what that is, you know, how we're going to really eat it. And our rule is just follow our stomach.
Something you talk a lot about in the book is nothing goes to waste. Mm-hmm. And what are some of the things that you like to do with the waste, so to speak, the scraps?
I mean, sausage. We make a lot of sausage. You know, we also use the fat. You know, we'll fry sweet potatoes and the beef fat. You know, we'll use the lard, make shortbread cookies. You know, nothing really is going to waste. And if there's some trim that's not good for sausage or not good really for consumption, we'll use it, roast it, and put it in with our stock, you know, to give it a little more flavor, roasting flavor. So we really don't, you know, waste anything.
It's the holiday season.
Yes.
So what are some great things that people can be making right now for meats?
I mean, there's a lot of things. You know, for us, we're going to be selling not just like prime ribs. We're going to be selling, you know, all roasts. We're going to get one, you know, one to, you know, two really special beef that we have hanging right now, and turn them into special different roasts. So everybody can have a choice of what they can get, be a chuck roast or ribeye or tenderloin. But here in the holiday season, you know, it's always the hams. The hams are great. People love, you know, hams, and it's really easy way to kind of handle a ham at home if you didn't want to get the traditional kind of honey baked ham that's crusted with all the sugar and honey. You can just get a fresh ham, a green ham, debone it and stuff with whatever you want, and you know, even go ahead and brine it or inject some brine in there. It's always great for the holidays.
One of the things I love that you've mentioned in the book is about sort of the transition from butchering like in the kitchen to the actual home, and sort of this renewed spirit of self-reliance amongst people. Can you talk a little bit about that and what your thoughts on that are? Like why people are being drawn to learning how to butcher again?
Yeah, I think it kind of goes back to when I was talking about completing that circle, you know, slaughtering an animal is everybody, you know, they're really interested in knowing where the food's coming from, how the food's being grown or what that food's eating, and, you know, how to go ahead and prepare it themselves, be it, you know, cooking an onion, chopping an onion, or if it's, you know, butchering a 4-quarter of beef, you know. So it's just really continuing that knowledge because, you know, it's what, you know, we want. We want to learn more and know how to be more self-sustainable.
Definitely. And what do you think, what's the, in your classes, like who is coming to your class?
We have, you know, men, women, professionals that, you know, will come in from out of state that, you know, are already in the food business or in the restaurant business and want to learn how to do this or have a, just work on their skills that they already have. And then we also get, you know, professional businessmen and businesswomen that want to, you know, come in and do something after work. You know, it's fun. They will get groups. They'll come in. We actually had a bachelorette party for a sausage class.
Wow.
That was points where at times I didn't really know what to say. But, you know, it's just all over. And it's really, it's been really awesome experience, especially, you know, in the longer classes like the beef class. You know, we get some, you know, women that come in and they just love it. And they do a really good job. And you know, not to say that the men don't either, but we just get all over the board.
How are women different at butchering than men? Like, is there anything physically or like a style that you notice? I'm just curious.
It's everybody's unique in their own way, male or female. But a lot of times, you know, when you're explaining things, it's always nice. You don't have to explain things, you know, twice, and people are really paying attention and doing a good job. You know, so they're all pretty much the same. Yeah. Every class is totally different. There's always, you know, a couple people that aren't really totally focused, but.
Oh God!
But they do have a sharp knife, and they sign a waiver, so it's fine.
Yeah. Have you ever had any mishaps? I'm sure, like some wild and crazy. That would be me in your class. Yeah. I would probably find a way to cut off my hand or something. Yeah.
We try to avoid that. We do a safety 101.
That's good. What is something right now? I noticed on your site you made like a amazing foie gras that I believe you put in a brine or a vinegar.
We made our torchon.
A torchon, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we made that.
What's going on there? It looks amazing.
Yeah, it's a little, you know, more kind of a non-traditional way of making a torchon. Normally you would warm the lobe foie up, and then come and devein it. Instead of doing that, we would just come as cold and just break it off, and it kind of breaks off where the vein goes, so you're able to pull the veins out. And then instead of, you know, when it's warm, you would put the cure on there. So it cures, well, we have it still chunked up into these nice crumbs. We'll go ahead and put the cure on there and let it sit overnight. And then once that's done and cured, we'll go ahead and put, you know, either a balsamic vinegar or pulp port or really any sort of, you know, acid or a kind of marinade that you want. And then once that's done, we'll go ahead and twist it up so it's a nice, good cylinder. Let it hang overnight, poach it, hang overnight, make it nice and tight. And it comes out really beautiful because it looks like a stained glass window almost, because you get the different chunks and you get all the veins in there of the, I don't want to say veins, the lines of the marinade and the balsamic port.
It looks amazing.
Thank you.
Can you kind of give a little bit of, break off a little preview for people who are interested in the book about some of the recipes that they might find in it?
Yeah, each animal, we have a focused, you know, showcase sausage Three sausages in the book is the merguez, beef red hot, and charred scallion and pork, which are, you know, three of my favorite sausages, but also, you know, some of our most popular sausages that we do. And you know, it was kind of tough for me to actually give up the recipes because they took a long time to come up with. But the sausage recipes are great. And the thing about all the recipes is that there's not only the, you know, grams, ounces, and the American volume weights, like cups and tablespoons, is we also put it into percentages. So, which percentages are really handy if you're dealing with a whole animal and you have an odd amount of meat, like 10.23 pounds of beef. Well, you can go ahead and say, this is what I have. And the formula's in the book. Plug in the weights in the formula to the ingredient, and it's going to give you exact amount of ingredients that you need for that amount of weight, which is really helpful, like I said, to maximize your yield.
Absolutely.
So that's a really handy tool. And then some of the other recipes is we have, you know, the lambkettas in there. We do a beef neck braise, pork belly and garbanzo soup, lamb shank and curry. So it's only 15 recipes, but you know, they've really been tested a lot, and you know, we're really happy with them. It tastes great.
Where can people find this book?
Well, and we have it online on our site, but, you know, really kind of anywhere, hopefully your, you know, local bookstore has it first, and then there's always, you know, Amazon.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I encourage everybody to go check it out, because Whole Beast Butchery is really an amazing book. For all the vegetarians out there, I think they should also purchase it, because it's beautiful. And
yeah, thank you.
We'll probably convert them into wanting to eat meat again. So.
We love vegetarians.
But yeah, so congratulations on this book. It's really exceptional. And your website, which is
4505meats.com.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it was SF or something, but,
no SF.
But thank you so much for coming on the show. And, thanks to all the listeners out there. Thanks to Carlos Salguero and Jack Inslee, the rest of the crew at Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Helen Holliman. I'll see y'all next week for another set.
Let's go out to eat and get some meat. Turkey and jam, macaroni and ham. Say, do you like steak? I can surely make. If you hear me now, sing it loud for me.
On December 17th, Typhoon Sendong dropped over 180 millimeters of rain in less than 24 hours and caused severe flash flooding to the northern Mindanao region of the Philippines. The cities of Iligan and Cagayan de Oro City were hit the worst, and the area has suffered severe damage and human loss. 654 people have been claimed dead, hundreds more are missing, and nearly 100,000 Filipinos have been displaced after the floodwaters destroyed everything in its path during the late hours of the night. The city's power and water supplies were shut down for nearly 24 hours, and many Filipinos need your help. Xavier University is accepting donations to help those in need. Please visit www.sendongrelief.org for more information. That's www.sendongrelief.org.